There's a reoccurring problem that we see mentioned in the book of Ecclesiastes. Sometimes it's presented a little differently from the other time that we noticed it, but it all is based on the same problem. And that problem is the prosperity of the wicked and the suffering of the righteous. In chapter 8 of Ecclesiastes, verse 14, the writer states, "There is a vanity which is done upon the earth." And he's simply saying, here is a problem that I've not been able to solve. Here is a problem that I have seen and I know exists, and it bothers me, and I don't know how to deal with it. What is this problem? That there be just men unto whom it happeneth according to the work of the wicked. That is, here is a just man, a good man, a righteous man. But the things that happen to him are the things that ought to happen to a man who is wicked. Again, there be wicked men to whom it happeneth according to the work of the righteous. That is, here is a man who is wicked, who lives wickedly and does wicked and evil things. And yet the things that happen to him are the things that ought to happen to a righteous man. I said that this also is vanity. Solomon's observation is that such a circumstance seems to be unfair. And the word vanity means profit. So as he looks at this circumstance, he says there's really nothing profitable that comes from this kind of uneven and unbelievable kinds of circumstances. Whenever you have a problem, then there are always the attempt to find some kind of solution. So now he offers two solutions to this grave problem that he has witnessed. In other words, since you see this happening, and we've all seen it, and since you know that it occurs, and we know that, how are we going to react to it? As human beings who've seen the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper, what are we going to say? What are we going to do? What's our reaction going to be? Are we going to say, look, doesn't make me any difference what God does, I'll just live my life as best I can? Well, that's the kind of reaction that Solomon has. He had a reaction. Maybe not that kind, but other people have had other reactions. Some people have said, listen, if that's what being righteous, and we might put it this way, brother, if that's what going to church gets you, I don't see any reason to go. If that's what being a Christian, if that's what it gets you, I don't see any reason to be a Christian. Now, that's the kind of reaction we get from time to time from people who are not wise. But here's reaction number one. Then I commended mirth, because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry. Then I commended mirth. He said, look, if this is the way that life treats people in this uneven fashion, then I think the best thing you can do is just have a good time. He said, I turned to mirth. I said that laughter and just let all these problems of life roll off of you and go ahead and just have a good time. That's what I think we ought to do. Because he said the best that we can make of a circumstance is simply to eat and to drink and to be merry. And you know, that's a solution that a lot of people have adopted when they didn't really understand what was going on in the world. They tried living for the Lord for a while and, quote, it didn't work. In fact, I guess the most classic example of that I saw, and in fact Richard was involved with it, in it with me. We visited a couple that we knew, and this young man had become involved with the prosperity gospel, and what had made it so difficult, he's going to a very affluent church in West Little Rock, and the men in the church preached this kind of affluent gospel, and they just told him, just go for it, man. God's going to bless you. And he went for it. And this was in the computer business, and when people were going in and going under in a hurry, and he just threw all into it with just an abandon, got his daddy-in-law to mortgage his home and land, and they all scraped up their savings with the idea that we are righteous people and God is on our side. Our God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. God can't go broke. And so they just launched this business with all the confidence in the world that what they needed to do was risk it all and God would bail them out. Well, the sad story is that they risked it all and it began to go under. And you know what the advice was from the people who'd encouraged them to go into business? Shake off this lack of faith that you're showing and go out and buy something really expensive. Go buy some real expensive automobile. Go buy a BMW and just show God you still trust Him. And he did. That is, he went out and bought what he could. You know, quit being faithless, believe God, it'll work. Well, when we came in contact with him, he was in a little two-bedroom house in a rather shabby section of town, really upset at God for the way God had treated him. See, there are a lot of people like that in the world today. He said, I tried to do right, but you get kicked every time you try to do right. What was his attitude? Even his wife adopted an attitude of just eat, drink, and be merry. Who cares anymore? And they really adopted that philosophy. That's not the answer. In fact, that's not even seeing the question for what it really is. Because we don't know the workings of God, and that's going to come just a little bit later. But then I commended mirth, because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry, for that shall abide with him of his labor the days of his life, which God giveth him under the sun. That is, that's life lived at its best. You might as well adopt that philosophy, because really that's all you're ever going to get out of it, is just the mirth or the fun, the satisfaction you have while you're living. So you might as well just go ahead, forget about these serious problems of theology and philosophy, and just give yourself to forgetting about it and living a life of contentment and ease. Well, there's always the other way, which is to dig into it. Throw yourself into the work night and day. Give yourself to it 100%. Try to figure it all out. Keep a record. Write it down. And that's what the writer has established here is solution number two. When I applied mine heart to know wisdom, and to see the business that is done upon the earth, that is, when I said, okay, I'm going by human wisdom, figure out all this stuff. There is a formula that I can plug into this question, why do the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper? I can plug it in, and there'll be an equation develop, and out of it all, I'll be able to understand it all, and I'll be able not only to understand, I'll be able to explain it to you. So this man threw himself into this search for the answer to what wisdom could define and determine and see. He threw himself into it night and day. For also there is that neither day nor night that seeth sleep with his eyes. In other words, I'm not going to sleep nor rest until I find out by applying my intellect to this problem, until I find out the solution. How did that work? Then I beheld all the work of God that a man cannot find out, the work that is done under the sun. What did he do? Well, by throwing himself night and day into trying to solve this problem, he discovered all the problems that a man never can solve. You know, sometimes, instead of finding the answer, as we look for a problem, we just find out there are a lot more problems than we ever knew existed. And we think, okay, here's a problem, I'll find the answer. So we look for the answer, but we don't find the answer. We just find that there are 1,000 more problems, more complicated than the one we thought existed. It's as if a person said, the real problem is finding solution to what is 2 and 2. Not realizing that there's an infinite number of numbers, both negative and positive, that he has to deal with if he ever finds the answer to what 2 and 2 is. He'll just find out that there's just an infinite number of problems that exist in mathematics, and all of them beg for an answer. That's sort of the way life is. That's what we find out when we decide we're going to find out the key to life, and we're going to find out the key to understanding God and the work of God and understanding man and how man works on this earth and what he does and what he doesn't do. What we find out is, as we investigate, is the fact that there are so many other things that we never will understand about God's work and about man himself. One of the things that I've been amazed at is in the field of psychology, in its early days, there were just very few problems that men acknowledged from the viewpoint of mental health or mental unhealth, whichever way you might want to look at it. We described men who were mentally unstable in about 4 different categories. You know, we did the psychiatry in its early days just said, here's about 4 kinds of mental circumstances that we see, that we know that this presents an unhealthy view of life. And then the more that psychiatrists and psychologists have studied, they've just been able to add more categories. They've never found the solution. They've just found out there's a lot more problems than they ever thought about. And that's sort of the way it is in social things, and maybe even in medicine, I don't know. But it seems like that, you know, we think that, well, this is pretty simple. If we can find a solution to these things, boy, we'll have it made. That's kind of where we are in the environment. Right now, we don't know what to do to correct some of the real serious flaws in what we've done to ourselves environmentally wise, because sometimes we think we have the answer to solve the problem that we've created, and solving the problem creates more of a bad circumstance than the problem did. So the answer is worse than the problem. Now, this is the kind of frustration that Solomon said he experienced when he decided, I will look for the answer by just main strength. I'll just apply my mind to it, and I'll do it night and day, 23 hours a day, 7 days a week, until I find out the answer. And what he found out was there are 1,000,000 things he didn't know. He said, if you labor, though a man labor to seek it out, yet he shall not find it. Yea, farther, Though a wise man think to know it, yet shall he not be able to find it. There's a real difficulty that we have in life, and just about everything. And that is accepting things that we don't understand by faith and leaving them in the hand of God, and yet not adopting that attitude so we'll be so lazy that we become hard-shelly in our attitude, saying no one can do anything about anything. But I think what this man particularly had in mind was this problem with righteous and just people and wicked people, and seeing that things didn't turn out as they ought to turn out as we view fairness. The answer, of course, is that none of us know. We don't know what a man gave up. We don't know what a woman, what a price she may have paid for what she has. We may look at a person and say, boy, that they're really lucky that that happened to them, when we have no idea of what it may have cost them in their own self. That is, what they had to give up in order to purchase what they have with. It might not have been money, but it might have been something more precious than money. We don't need to envy people or resent people until we know for sure what they had to pay for it, and I think many times we'll never know. We can't be just people who adopt the attitude, well, eat, drink, and be merry. Everything will turn out the way God has decreed it to turn out. Not anything I can do, not anything you can do. Roll with the punches. Try to keep your head above water. Laugh when things go bad and laugh when things go good. That's not a good attitude. It's not faith. That's not faith. That's fatalism. We can't say, okay, I'll whip it with my own brain power. We'd be fighting with a defective weapon if we decided to do that. We can't do it. So what do? Well, we look into the Bible, accept the truths we see there, learn what we can, relate it to God, and then trust God by faith, and labor, and work, and trust, and try. Then when we're frustrated, leave it in the hands of God for him to do the best he can with it. It's good advice. It's a good way to live your life. But it's not easy to come to those conclusions, nor is it an easy way to live your life that way, because we keep finding these problems that we can't solve.